welcome back. Well, unless you die, you become old, so says our author. For 5,000 years, old has been defined as beginning in the ages of somewhere around 60 and 70, and that means today that more people will be alive spending more years in elderhood than in childhood. You know, how should we view growing old? Is it such a negative thing? Dr. Louise Aronson is a Harvard-trained geriatric physician and an award-winning author. Her new book, Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, and Reimagining Life, talks about a different perspective on growing old. She uses vignettes and science and psychology, literature, and personal experiences to tell us it may be not so bad. Hi, doctor. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I just couldn't help but laugh. I don't know if you heard the commercial that went on a little while ago, but it was Walter Jacobson.
The hearing aid.
Yes, our award, Grammy Award-winning local anchor. He'd been an anchor for 50 years, and he's part of the WGN family. But yeah, he was talking about hiding the hearing aids and not looking old. What do you make of that? Is that something that's just a common perception in our society, that we shouldn't look old and act old?
Exactly. It's very common and very tragic. And, you know, nobody should feel badly for feeling that way. It just means you're a well-socialized member of our culture. The problem is it does us all a disservice because most of us will live to be old. And it's actually really interesting. If you line up a group of people of different ages and have another group of people of different ages look at them, everyone can tell you which of the people is old. And it'll generally be people beginning somewhere between the ages of 60 and 70. But the people in the judging group who are themselves between the ages of 60 and 70 or older will not think of themselves as old. They'll think of those other people as old. And then in hiding it, we reinforce the notion that it's shameful. It's actually completely normal to lose your hearing as you get older. You know, it's sort of completely normal to have bad judgment when you're a teenager. It's completely normal, you know, to gain a little weight around the middle in middle age. You know, there are all these things that are normal, but we somehow make the ones that are normal for old age into failures and losses and things we're ashamed of and should hide instead of, hey, this is old age, and I have these cool new hearing aids, and now I'm hearing terrifically. So what's wrong with that? Nothing.
But a lot of people, don't you think, I mean, as I'm getting into, you know, that age group, I hear people say, gosh, I get out of bed, and it sounds like a percussion section, and I used to be able to do this, and now I can't see, and now I'm, you know. So there's a lot of people in that age group that are complaining because they can't do the things they used to do. Are you saying that we should go into older age and kind of embrace that more as opposed to complain about it?
Well, you know, I'm fond of complaining myself, so far be it for me to tell anyone not to complain. You know, I think it's normal to complain. What I dispute is that that's the only story we tell. It's not that those things aren't true and that they aren't frustrating and sometimes painful and disappointing and all those things. You know, I don't mean to be saying any of that. But people tend to talk about their lives as if that is the whole life. And, you know, sometimes it figures fairly prominently. But most such people, when we look at sort of worldwide studies and U.S. studies, are actually much less anxious, much happier, and have greater life satisfaction, more time to do the things that matter most to them as they get older. It doesn't mean they don't have some aches and pains while they're doing them, right? And so the good news is that we have some aging science that may help with that. You know, like joint replacements are actually pretty wonderful these days. There are a few weeks that aren't so wonderful, but after that, it's usually much better. And there's aging science that may actually prevent some of that disability and discomfort, and that's really good. But it's never going to get rid of old age. We shouldn't be talking about curing old age. We don't cure childhood. Childhood comes with lots of burdens. It's very, very expensive. But we never talk about curing it, right? So this sort of second-class citizen thing is a product of our culture. It's something we've decided to do that harms all of us. Because there's actually really good research, too, that the more ageist you are, the more likely you are to have Alzheimer's markers in your spinal fluid, to die of heart disease 7 years earlier, and the less likely you are to recover well from a surgery or a procedure. So it literally makes your life worse to assume that life will be worse as you get older. And instead, we need to embrace both the positives and the negatives and tell all the true stories.
You know, I had an author of, I think the book was called Timing. I'm just probably you're aware of it. But he talked a little bit about how timing is different in different areas. But one of the things he talked about is something you talk about in your book, which is the you, which is like you're happy in your adulthood, and then you kind of go into middle age, and you kind of not as happy, and then you get into the elder years, and you become happier. And, you know, I don't know exactly why, and you probably know better than I do, but I imagine that people are, you know, you don't have to prove yourself anymore. I don't have to pretend that I'm, you know, if I don't like you, you know what, you're not my friend. And even this book was talking about how you have fewer friends when you're older, not because your friends are dying or because you're antisocial. It's because you don't have the time to deal with people you don't like. And you want to spend time with only those loved ones. And that makes sense, doesn't it?
It absolutely makes sense. And that is one of the things. I mean, there are people who actually have fewer friends because other people die. So I don't think we should totally discount that. But I also think you're just right. There was an article this week by Judy Graham, who does great writing about aging through Kaiser Health News mostly. And she reported on all the studies that show that most older people rate their health as good, very good, or excellent. And the first few comments on her Facebook page where she posted this, secondarily posted it, were like, these people are in denial. So they literally, when presented with facts, are in denial themselves that old age can be pleasant. And what those studies find are very similar to the happiness ones, which is that people prioritize. So they don't expect their body at 85 to be the way it was at 35. And as long as they're able to do the things they like best, or enough of the things they really like that are meaningful to them, that give them a sense of purpose and pleasure, then they feel like, hey, this isn't so bad, right? And so they rate their health as pretty good. They're not rating it on a standard that doesn't apply to them. And that's this great notion of having elderhood. And a lot of elders know this. Like, I'm going to judge it by the standards of elderhood, not by the standards of childhood or adulthood. I'm going to use the right metric for who I am now. And that allows that prioritization and that perspective that makes life more pleasurable.
We're going to take a break. We're talking to Dr. Louise Aronson, whose new book, Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life. You got to read it. It's really good. I'm actually going to be giving away my copy of it on our little Father's Day quiz at the end of the show. But stay with us, Dr. Aronson, and we're going to come back with the Karen County Show. You're listening to WGN.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you. If you're young at heart, for it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart.
We're talking about not being so young anymore. Dr. Louise Aronson is a Harvard-trained geriatric physician. Her book, Elderhood, is really, really good read because it's got some personal experiences. You've got vignettes of different people you've treated over the years, some psychology, some studies, some science. Very, very good. Congratulations on the book, Dr. Aronson. Let's talk a little bit about the let's talk about the healthcare field in general. How does the healthcare system fail older people?
Oh, in so many ways. It actually starts with training. So I'll speak to medical school, but it's essentially the same in schools of nursing, social work, physical therapy, occupational therapy, et cetera. But medical school lasts 4 years. And in those 4 years, people get about 2 to 4 months of training on children, recognize that children are a quarter of the population, so that's probably not the right proportion. And often a number of hours to a few days on older people. Now, older people are just 16% of the population, but inside hospitals, they're about 40%. And in clinics, they're anywhere from 30 to 70 or 80%, and that's across all medical and surgical specialties. So just as children use more from the education system, older people use more from the healthcare system. And yet, most of what we learn about in medical school are adults. very little about children and almost nothing about old age. So one of the ways we do a disservice to old people is that most of the people who are taking care of them don't have any expertise in that care. They don't know about the differences in physiology or how drugs work or different risk-benefit profiles or how priorities and areas of focus really shift in older bodies. And, you know, you would never, if you had a choice, you would never send your kid to an internist, a doctor for adults, right? You'd send your kid to a pediatrician. And yet we haven't had that same standard for older people and for geriatrics.
Now, you are a geriatric physician. So what does that mean?
I am.
That your training is, it does have that in that, specialty.
Exactly. So we do 3 years of adult medicine or family medicine first, and then a fellowship of 1 to 3 additional years, specific of getting expertise in the care of older adults and how their bodies work. And it's just sort of interesting because a lot of doctors will say, well, you know, this person doesn't need a geriatrician. I've been taking care of older patients for years. Well, my rebuttal to that is, you know, I have been listening to heart since I was a medical student, and I have been taking care of people with cancer my whole career. That does not make me either a cardiologist or an oncologist, right? It means I have more skill in those things than your average person on the street, as I should do with all my training. But I don't pretend to be an expert in something in which I haven't had that subspecialty training. And yet we sort of act like learning about older adults isn't so important. It's really a double standard, and it's one that hasn't been recognized well, although on a positive, more and more fields are beginning to recognize that and partner. There's some great partnerships between orthopedic surgeons and geriatricians, which lead to much better outcomes after hip fractures with people going home and not getting as confused, being able to walk better, all the things anybody would want for themselves or someone they love. Other surgeons are doing similar things. So there is progress in that area, but we still have a huge shortage of geriatric specialists.
You talk, age discrimination. You know, I know that it's out there as an attorney. I see it all the time. People trying to get jobs when they're older is just a very difficult thing. You talk about not only age discrimination, but you talk about a situation where there was an African-American patient who came in with gunshot wounds. And you kind of talk about how, you know, if it had been a white guy with gunshot wounds, would he have been treated differently? Tell us about the, are there gender, age, racial discrimination when it comes to healthcare?
Definitely. And actually, there's a lot of research on this. And it's not only that we know there are gender biases and race biases and age biases. It's this phenomenon called intersectionality, which means that if you belong to more than one of those categories, so say you're an African-American woman or you're a Latino man in his 80s, then those categories you are that are something other than, you know, sort of young to middle-aged white male disadvantage you in the healthcare system, that you are likely to get treated later for whatever problem you have, and maybe less effectively. And that's not just a matter of your zip code, though the zip code does tend to correlate with quality of hospitals, unfortunately. It's also about the care, and it's not always intentional. Sometimes it is, but more often it's actually not. It's unconscious bias. One of my favorite examples of this was brought up by another physician writer, Vanessa Grubbs, who is herself African-American, and with her then boyfriend, he needed a kidney transplant, and their white friends were getting kidneys sooner. And she looked into it, and it turned out that people, you know, all the nephrologists were saying, well, we're not prejudiced. But it turned out that they were much less likely to refer African-Americans with the same amount of kidney disease for transplant. And so this is absolutely critical. It turned out if you didn't rely on people, but you relied on a different policy change, so a system-wide change, you got rid of that inequality. And the system-wide change was that when you were referred to dialysis, meaning your kidney function was bad, you were put on the transplant list automatically. So you didn't have to wait for a doctor to say you're worthy of this. Because what happens if you do that is if the African Americans are referred later, it means they're sicker, which means the transplants go less well, which means the word on the street is the transplants go less well in African Americans. Let's save the kidneys and give them to people who aren't African American. So this works out, you know, the same thing happens to people of color, to people who are gay, to people who are female or gender fluid, and to people who are either very young, so it happens sometimes to kids, and quite frequently to people who are over age 60 or 70.
Dr. Aronson, we just
that's actually almost all of us.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. We just have just a few moments. Wow, this went way too fast. For our listeners out there, and we have a lot of aging listeners out there, What are some of the things that you can do to either help yourself or to help your loved ones get good medical care in the world we live in right now?
First off, you know, demand that they recognize your age and can discuss with you the risks and benefits, not just generally for the disease or the treatment, but for someone your age, thinking about health status, functional status, longevity, stuff like that. Consider adaptations. Sometimes you can change the person. Sometimes changing the environment, which many people don't consider healthcare, is just as useful in enabling the person to do what they want. The other thing is that it doesn't even matter if you're 100 years old. Exercise increases, decreases pain, increases people's function, and a positive attitude, you know, towards adapting to things. Like, I can't quite do that the way I used to do it. It's not that you're not going to do it. You're going to do it differently and still get pleasure from it. So I think when we are the adult children in particular, we often think of safety. And what we should thinking about more is quality of life and independence, not deciding for the older person, but creating the right environment so the older person can decide for him or herself. It's what we'll want when we get there.
Dr. Louise Aronson, thank you so much for joining us. I highly recommend the book Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life. Where can people get that book? Is it pretty much anywhere, Amazon and all the big bookstores?
Yeah, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, local bookstores. It appears to be all over right now, for which I'm really grateful.
Congratulations on a fine book, and thank you for joining me on the show.